Right now, it is time to welcome back to Robin Hood Radio Maria Horn, who was running for re-election once again in the 64th. And we haven't spoken to Maria in quite a while. And I'm sure she's kind of busy right now, but we appreciate her joining us. Thanks for joining us this morning, Maria.
Good morning, Marshall. It's great to be with you on I guess, All Hallows Day.
Yes, that's right. After Halloween, which thank goodness for us held for most people, and they were able to get out there and enjoy the holiday. Well, let's get back. Speaking about Halloween, let's get back to politics for just a moment here, and that is the upcoming elections, which are now one of these elections that are focused not only locally but nationally as well. With the midterms, you are running for re-election once again, is this something that you decided on early on, or is this something that you decided? You know what, you've got a couple of terms under your belt, you've got some legislation that you've actually worked on and put in and are working on right now. What was the thought process once again about running once again for re-election?
The job of a legislator is a collegial one. We are one of 151 people, and nobody does anything alone. And to do it effectively, you have to build relationships, with people who are experts in certain subject matter, with colleagues across the political spectrum. And you do that by spending time with them. And two terms in, I have a lot of those relationships, and it enables me to be much more effective. And you get to know issues deeper, you get to understand the sort of levers of how things happen, and it makes me excited to run for a third term and out there asking for people's support.
Yeah, I expect the first term is of a new legislator is one of those that basically learning the ropes. And the second term, you've learned the ropes and you get in. And by the time you are where you are now, you have not only a background to run on, but also more knowledge of the ins and outs, and also those partnerships that you work with other legislators. Well, I guess the topics that we'll talk about this morning, front and center, will be, of course, the Sharon Hospital, which once again, more community members are being involved. 300 to 400 people showed up on the green in Sharon. This is a cross state line event where politicians from both parties in New York State and here in Connecticut to preserve what we have here at the hospital, Maria. This is probably one of the biggest stories that concern people in our area.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, Marshall. And it actually... the more you learn about it, the more that this is part of a broader problem. I mean, fighting for our rural hospital has been something that's been core to us. It's been very important to us, Sharon Hospital, for many years. But as we've been working on this, you can see, similar things happening across the state with hospital systems getting bigger and taking over independent hospitals for reasons we, can understand and hope. And the hope is, of course, that would make things better, more cost effective for people. But what it also does is for a hospital system that is only watching that bottom line, it's logical that they start retracting services from their more rural hospitals because it's always more expensive to provide those services in rural areas. And so for me, at Sharon Hospital and also other hospitals across the state, that's playing out in maternity services. And particularly right now when we are, it is very much top of mind for people to focus on what Connecticut has done, of which I'm quite proud, to defend legal access to reproductive care, including abortion services. That also, choice means making sure that every woman in Connecticut has access to both maternity care and abortion services. And around here, that's often the same people who are providing that care. And so it is an important, you can't just lop off rural areas because it's hard to do. We have to double down and take a look at why it's hard and figure out how to fix the problem rather than throwing up our hands.
It's interesting. I just received notice from Medicare and Anthem Blue Cross about some bills, about some health issues that I've had lately, that trying to find out what certain things are wrong with me. And for the first time ever, and they talk about Sharon Hospital's billing being down. Well, these bills, even though the tests were all done at Sharon Hospital, these bills were sent to Vassar Brothers Hospital. And that was a little shocking to me. And I've come to realize that in this past couple of months, where I'm dealing with an issue of discovering what's going on with myself, how important the hospital is, how important the lab is, how important having all these things available. And I just had a friend who probably would have died if Sharon Hospital was set up the way they wanted it to be set up, because they needed emergency surgery. I mean, it is a problem that is just huge, and hopefully will be settled by the state sooner than later.
Yes, I certainly hope so. I think the Office of Health Strategy, which is the branch of the Connecticut government that oversees the operation of hospitals, has clearly demonstrated that they understand the issues at play in some other rulings that were quite similar to the one they're facing with Sharon Hospital, which, you know, Nuvance has, of course, requested to shut down maternity. But, you know, you point out that this is about what does it mean to have a community hospital? What are the critical services that need to be provided? In our area, telehealth has been, you know, a hugely positive thing and has given people access to specialists that they might not have had access to in our area. But there are certain services you can't provide by telehealth. You need emergency care. You can't have a baby by telehealth. And so we have to look at the problem holistically and figure out how to make sure that these services are available to all people, including people in our region.
All right. Another thing that's on the agenda is broadband. The Sharon Task Force just did an outstanding job in actually forcing and bringing Comcast to the table with their development, and also now also the Frontier is starting to come to the table. But broadband is really, on most people's minds, the next thing on the list, I would think.
So you're absolutely right. It's another, you know, it's part of telehealth, as we were just saying, but it's part of education. It's part of our economy. We need to be able to get access to high-speed internet, and any map of Connecticut that takes a look at where the deficits are points a big red arrow at the northwest corner. So we were able to get, you know, there are significant federal resources that are coming into this area, and we were able to pass legislation that's going to help set up a grant program for communities to get access to those resources. But, you know, as you point out, there are certain towns that have really shown how this is going to work, because, you know, unfortunately, decades ago, we let the incumbent providers off the hook in terms of requiring them to provide universal access. And since then, they've cherry-picked where the profits are, and their businesses, can't blame them for that. But these are the roads of the 21st century. And so you look at what Sharon has done in particular to really do the work and figure out what it would look like to create a broadband network has, as you just pointed to, drawn the interest of the incumbent providers, both Comcast and Frontier. And so I think that's demonstrating that we can, if we do the work, we can bring a lot of people together to start to resolve some of these deficits.
I think they've done so good that other towns in the state are going to follow, and it'll sooner or later be called the Sharon Plan, because I think it's a plan that any town can follow and it's use the economic force of the might against these companies. They've just done a great job. Let's move on to the environment. You know, it's funny, you're looking at the things that are important locally here in our area, and they don't necessarily match up with national importance, but they kind of do. The environment was really brought into focus, what happened when all those trees were cut down in Housatonic Meadows, and what a combination of politicians, yourself included, and community activism can do, where once again, it's made a change in the way the DEP will operate in the future with these things.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And one of the things it demonstrated, I mean, the catastrophic decision making on the part of DEEP, but the importance in our area of our natural environment, which is, it's cultural for us. It's what keeps families in this area. It's what brings people to this area. It's part of our, you know, healthcare. It's part of our economy. We have so many businesses and farms that are dependent on that environment, and you know, you got to make sure that the decision making on a state level and, you know, nationwide. This isn't, obviously, you know, the climate isn't something that stops at the state borders. Is focused on those long term preservation, so that we can keep green space here in Connecticut and keep our clean air and clean water, and that requires, you know, thinking ahead. And that, to me, is one of the classic areas where, and I've served on the Environment Committee since I've been in office, because it is one of those issues, because the costs of environmental degradation are spread out, while the benefits of creating it are concentrated in a few places. And you've got to figure out a way to recalibrate that. And that's where government, I think, can perform a role. And I think the state has done, particularly in this last past year, we've done a lot to help move some climate legislation forward. And also, you know, in Housatonic Meadows, things like an example of a pilot project of how you manage that kind of park and its environment.
All right, we're speaking with Maria Horn, who is once again running for re-election in the 64th District here in our area. On television, I'm glad I'm on streaming services, as a matter of fact, because I don't have to get pummeled with all the advertisements that go back and forth. But a thing that's been brought up and which confused people, some people say, tax is out of control. But from what I've looked at, and I don't know, you can answer this better than I, you are involved in the government. I know part of the plan for going into the Lamont administration was to cut taxes. Has that been possible? And is that agenda what people are bringing up to you when you meet them?
Yes, so for sure. I mean, a lot of people, when I'm knocking on doors, you know, the cost of living inflation is biting a lot of people, particularly, you know, cost of home heating oil. People are preparing for the winter, and it is a problem, particularly for vulnerable households, which we will be focused on, I imagine, very, very quickly, or have already. But yeah, we were able, when I was first running in 2018, I had a lot of people, particularly people who'd worked in financial sectors, say, you know, how could you possibly take this job? You know, that Connecticut is in such terrible condition. Advance 4 years, and we've got an overflowing rainy day fund, and we were this year, you know, able to pass $600 million in tax cuts. That's extraordinary. And I all credit to Governor Lamont, who really worked in partnership with the legislature, and we changed the package over time, but it is aimed at the broad sector of people throughout Connecticut. For example, accelerating the elimination of taxes on Social Security and annuity income, so that you know, for income eligible people this tax year, 2022, those taxes will be eliminated. Child tax cuts, the gas tax holiday, which I certainly would advocate that we extend again once we are back in session. But I think, you know, that was important. And I think our record of fiscal responsibility is strong, and we ought to be really proud of that.
All right. Let's just talk about something that really popped up on the radar of one of the newspaper stories I saw. You're chair of the Public Safety Committee. You work on mental health and law enforcement, which has also become a big issue nationally, but also locally in the state.
Yeah, it is. And I was a prosecutor in an earlier part of my career, and I have a lot of strong law enforcement relationships. I'm proud to have been endorsed this year by the Police Officers Association of Connecticut because of that work. What we focused a lot on in speaking with them was mental health. And that's not only, that's of course mental health crises in the community that we have kind of dumped on the police without providing them adequate training to deal with it. And so we did put significant resources in the budget this year to help train police officers to manage some of that situation, and also to create and bolster programs in the community that can provide resources that the police can use when they are faced with that, you know, someone facing a mental health or addiction crisis. But also on the mental health officers of the officers themselves. You know, we certainly the just senseless, violent death of two officers in Bristol recently. You know, those are the headline-grabbing things that are, of course, you know, awful to read about. But police officers face, you know, trauma and stress every day, day in and day out, and that takes a toll on their lives and careers. And for them, if we're going to expect them to deal with the mental health crises that we're all seeing in the community, we have to make sure that we take care of our police officers' mental health too. So I'm very proud of a lot of relationships that I've built up in that area with people doing that work, and I look forward to staying involved in that as we look for ways to support our police both with resources and culturally.
All right, and the article out in the Republican American today that advanced voting is way up according to what the last 2 years ago or 4 years ago. So it's going to be an interesting election, no doubt. Maria, congratulations on so far surviving the state legislature. And good luck in the future.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you this morning.
All right, take care. Maria Horn, running for re-election in the 64th District here in the state of Connecticut on Robin Hood Radio.